Tonight I want to look at a passage found in what we call the wisdom literature, Old Testament passage or section of the Old Testament. As we think of Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, these are books that by and large they struggle with some of the complexities of life. And whether you're talking about Ecclesiastes, where Solomon is trying to put it all together and trying to figure out how it all works and what's involved, or we're talking about a proverb that is giving insight in terms of just how to live and wisdom to know how to live in today. Tonight I want to look in the book of Psalms, Psalm chapter 39. I've just entitled this, Struggling with Life's Complexities. David here is the psalmist, and he is struggling with life and how it all works and exactly what the Lord's doing. And just as he's observing and looking at things, there are a lot of complexities in life that he just doesn't really fully understand. And I like sections like this because here is a man of God who walks with the Lord and a mature man of God, and yet he still struggles too. He doesn't necessarily have all the answers. Not exactly sure how to put it all together. And this passage, he's kind of thinking out loud a little bit. He shares a little bit about what's on his heart. Then he expresses some things to the Lord, and ultimately he comes to a conclusion. And I trust tonight we'll kind of follow his path and understand what he's doing. But I want to read this section if I can. It's just a few verses. So let me begin in Psalm 39, verse 1. He says, I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue, Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as a handbreadth. A handbreadth was one of the ways they measured, basically, kind of about 4 inches, the width of your hand. But he's talking about a short span of time. And he's saying, thou hast made my days as a handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, or truly, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. Deliver me from my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. I was dumb. I opened not my mouth because thou didst it. Remove thy stroke away from me. I am consumed by the blow of thine hand. When thou with rebukes dost correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth. Surely every man is vanity. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Hold not thy peace at my tears, for I am a stranger with thee, and a sojourner, as all my fathers were. O spare me, that I may recover strength before I go hence and be no more. Now you can sense, even as you read this passage, kind of the agony of soul that he's dealing with in a passage of Scripture like this. Three parts tonight. First of all, David purposes to guard his lips lest he sin and discredit God. I may be speaking to someone tonight. You're kind of going through a time of struggle in your life. Sometimes when you struggle in your life, you're very wise to just kind of zip it. It's not always wise to express everything on your heart. You need to guard what you say, particularly before others, and even for that matter, even before the Lord. But there's two things he's concerned about. First of all, he did not want to sin. He says in verse 1, I will take heed to my ways. The idea is he's guarding his ways, that I sin not with my tongue. So easy to sin with your tongue. To say some things that shouldn't be said, or to say them in a manner that shouldn't be said. And particularly he's concerned that with his tongue he could dishonor the Lord and bring damage to the Lord's name. And so he's saying, look, I'm going through this struggle in my life, and I want to be very careful that I guard my lips because I don't want to sin with my tongue. Sometimes we sin by murmuring. Ever murmured against the Lord? Probably we all have in our lives. Where we blame God for things, sometimes, frankly, He allowed, for sure, but he did not cause. We usually cause them and have the problem ourselves, and then we blame other people, sometimes others, sometimes even the Lord. But David is very concerned here. He doesn't just say anything. When you're going through a struggling time, we should be admonished by David to be very careful what we say, lest we sin against the Lord with our tongue, with our lips. The other thing he was concerned about is he does not want to discredit God. He goes on to say, I will keep my mouth with a bridle. And thinking of a horse or an animal, a muzzle, if you would, something that's keeping the animal, limiting the animal, while the wicked is before me. David was apparently surrounded by folks, some that did not know the Lord and some that repudiated the Lord. And he wanted to be very careful about his life and about his lips, because he knew that if he was not careful, that what he said could discredit the name of the Lord. In essence, he would be giving ammunition to God's enemies to repudiate the Lord and to reject the Lord and to discredit God's name. And he didn't want to be part of that. Maybe at school, young people, or perhaps at work, folks, things are not necessarily going that well. We need to be very careful what we say. There are people out there that are kind of sharpening their knives, that are looking for a reason not to believe in God. They're looking for a reason to reject the Lord. And if they know you're a believer, quite often they look at you. They're sort of gauging your life, what you do, and even what you say. And they're letting that be the basis of whether or not they're going to receive the Lord or whether or not they're going to reject the Lord. Your life and your testimony, the words that come forth from your lips, become very significant in the lives of people, particularly people that do not believe in God or do not want anything to do with God, because they're almost looking for an excuse anyway. If you've ever witnessed to folks, probably one of the major reasons why people say they don't want anything to do with God is because they've met some hypocrite who claimed to be a Christian. And they've seen how he talks on the one hand, but they've seen how he lives on the other. Or they've seen what happens to him and how he responds when things are not going so well. He complains like everybody else. He blames the Lord for what's taking place in his life. And after all, if that's really what God is like, then they don't want anything to do with him anyway. And so here is David the psalmist as he's musing upon life and the complexities of life. And he's very concerned about guarding his lips and being careful about what he says, so that you might not give ammunition to the wicked and you might not discredit the Lord or in any way bring disgrace to the Lord. But then I want you to see, secondly, not only does he purpose to guard his lips, but he pours out his complaint to God. You see this in the book of Job. If you've looked at Job, which is also part of wisdom literature. As Job is going through struggles, he's pouring out his complaint to the Lord. It's almost like there's a little bit of venting. You ever vent? You know, sometimes you go through times and pressure gets intense and you're struggling with things and you find yourself. And the sense is he's trying to keep all this inside. But no matter how hard he tries to keep it inside, eventually it just sort of piles up on him and he can't help himself. It's almost like it's going to come out. But thankfully, it's coming out unto the Lord versus coming out to mankind. And so he's pouring out really his complaint to the Lord. And there are three things that he's complaining about. First of all, he's complaining about what we might call life's brevity. Verse 2 says, I was dumb with silence. I held my peace, even from good, and my sorrow was stirred. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue. You can sense that it was all inside. It was boiling. And finally it came to the surface. And as David is looking out at life, one of the things that he is struggling with is that life is so short, and yet it is so full of so many struggles and difficulties and challenges. Verse 4 says, Lord, make me to know mine end, and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Now you look at life. A number of us last night at one of the adult Bible study gatherings, our Sunday school, if you would, adult Bible study at a home, and we were reflecting a little bit. I remember the very first, I think that was the first Christmas party that I went to, or one of the first, I went to this home. And all of a sudden you turn around, 10 years have gone by, you know. It's amazing how fast a life goes by. Just seems like yesterday, we often say. That this happened or that happened. One of our sons today is just turned 21. You know, just yesterday he seemed like he was a little boy. But life goes by quickly. And David is struggling with life's brevity. I mean, you look back and it just seems like, you know, just a few days ago, but really it's been years ago now, that something happened, and now it's just flown by and life is just going by, and David's looking out at all of this and he's trying to put it all together. And one of his frustrations is the fact that life is just so short. And he's crying out to God that God might help him to understand how to put all this together, about the brevity of life and how challenging that is and how quickly it goes by. Now, we know this. Most everyone here is familiar with James chapter 4 and verse 14, which simply says this: whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanishes away. It's gone. May I just remind you tonight that your kids grow up quickly. You have but a little window of time. Don't get distracted with a lot of other things that maybe aren't that important. Some things I know you have to do, but make sure you do what you need to do rather than what you sometimes feel like you have to do. Sometimes in our marriages, we take things for granted. And we let precious time pass us by quickly. And you look back and before you know it, your loved one's gone. There are some things you should have said. There were some things you should have done. It's too late now. And as all the sense of the shortness and the brevity of life begins to press down upon the psalmist, he's struggling with this. He's pouring out his complaint unto the Lord about life's brevity. But secondly, he pours out his complaint unto the Lord about life's vanity. Notice verse 5. He says, "Behold, thou hast made my days as a handbreadth, short time. And mine age is nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity." This idea of vanity is the sense of the breath. There's an emptiness that's there. There's a sense of uselessness that's there. You know, life is filled up with a lot of useless things. There's a lot of monotony. There's a lot of routine. There's a lot of things that when you evaluate what really fills your life, quite often a fair amount of what fills your life is pretty useless and pretty vain, pretty empty. And David's struggling with that. How all this seems to make sense, because to him it doesn't make sense. He doesn't understand it. He doesn't know how to put it all together. The pieces of the puzzle don't quite go together like he would hope they would. Solomon struggled with this. He says in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 2, "Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." But here was a guy who was considered the wisest man that had ever lived, who was certainly one of the wealthiest men that was living at that time. And as he looked out over life, after he had built and accomplished and accumulated and all the rest of that, he came to the conclusion that all is vanity, all is vain, all is empty, all is futile. He also says in chapter 1 and verse 14, "I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity." And I like this last phrase, vexation of spirit. The idea is striving after the wind, trying to catch the wind. You can't catch the wind. And life can become like that. You feel like you're kind of going around in circles, like you're a little bit on the merry-go-round out on the playground that goes around and around and around. And sometimes it doesn't make much sense. It doesn't seem to stop. Doesn't have a place to get on, doesn't have a place to get off. And your life can spin around and around and around, and sometimes you begin to look at it, and particularly a busy time like this time of the year, you kind of want to just say, "Stop, let me off of this thing, let me get out of here." And you feel like your life is just kind of full and overflowing, and yet when you evaluate what you're doing and what you're really involved in, you kind of wonder if it has any purpose or any meaning or any value at all. As David looked at his life, he was struggling with the fact that life was vain. Then thirdly, he was struggling about life's sorrows. Notice verse 6. "Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain." And then this last little phrase, "He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them." The sense is here was a guy who was accumulating things, achieving things, building a business, building a life, accomplishing many what you might call accomplishments that would have been admirable and desirable and all the rest of that. But in the back of his mind, he was kind of wondering what was going to happen to all this stuff when he was dead and gone. Once again, Solomon in Ecclesiastes felt the same way. In chapter 2 and verse 18, he said this, "Yea, I hated all my labor, which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me, and who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool. Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity." Recently, I was with a pastor who is a mature pastor, really getting ready to retire. He had been at this church for quite a while, and we were chatting a little bit, and they were getting ready to have a transition. And as he was kind of reflecting back over his life and how he'd been there for a number of years and people that he had impacted and how the Lord had blessed and what it was like when he came and what God was able to accomplish through all these years. And he was at a time, and you know, you've probably known people have been there. Maybe you've been there yourself. But he was looking at all this thinking, you know, I hope this next guy that comes is not going to mess it all up. You know, not going to ruin what I've spent my life trying to build and seeing the Lord do some good things. I hope he's not going to mess it all up. You know, and you could tell he was having a hard time just kind of letting go with things, you know. But isn't that true? There are things you accomplish. Some of you have been able to put a pretty good sized nest egg away. And one of these days you're going to leave that to your kids, and you hope your kids are going to be wise and they're going to use it wisely. Just because you worked hard, just because you've accumulated, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to leave it to someone who's going to be wise with it. May wind up being a fool. There are times when parents leave resources to children, and those resources, because they never worked for them and they didn't really value them and they didn't really appreciate them, it winds up destroying those kids. You have to be very careful when you leave things, because what you have been good with, someone may not be good with. And as David is looking at all of this, he's saying, "Lord, you know, I don't know how this is going to work out, and I'm not sure how this is going to take place. And Lord, I'm just, you know, this just doesn't seem right, and I'm struggling with all of this. And Lord, what's going to happen?" And he's battling with all these things that are kind of going on around in his mind over and over again as he's trying to decide what's going to happen as he looks down the road and looks in the future. So he's pouring out this sense of complaint to the Lord. Now, as he's struggling with all of this, he comes to some conclusions. This is kind of where I want you to go tonight, okay? He ends this psalm of struggle and intensity and burden about life and the issues of life and the complexities of life, and he ends it by simply praying to the Lord for deliverance. He's looking to God. And folks, you may wander around a little bit out in the world, and you may wander around a little bit here, and you may try a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But ultimately, for the Lord's people, there's only one place to go. That's to come back to God. And that's exactly what the psalmist does in this passage of Scripture. Now, notice verses 7 and 9. He comes to the conclusion that only God can provide hope. Verse 7 says this, "And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in Thee." There's only one place to go. It's not your wisdom, it's not your savvy, it's not your ability to be shrewd and to be frugal and to put things away. It's not all the things that sometimes we depend on and we look to in ourselves. Ultimately, no matter how shrewd you are, no matter how frugal you are, no matter how hard you work, it has to come back because you've got to hope in God. There's only one place to hope. That's in God. Life may have treated you well, but life may not have treated you so well. You may kind of be struggling as you look back over your life and you think, you know, I look over the last 20 years and what do I have to show for it? And you can find yourself struggling and being discouraged, or you may look at the fact that you've been able to accomplish a lot, but as you look out into the future, what's going to happen to it? No matter what end of the pole that you're on, no matter what end of the string you're on, as we come back to it, for all of us tonight, there's only one place to hope. That's in God. I don't have any confidence in myself. I don't know what the future holds. But I know God holds the future, and that I can look to Him, and that I can trust Him. And he talks about it in this passage. He says, "Deliver me from all my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. I was dumb. I opened up my mouth because Thou didst it." He's ultimately saying, "Lord, I'm going to hope in You, and I'm going to trust in You, and I'm going to depend upon You. And Lord, I don't have to understand all of these different things. I know that I can trust implicitly in You and that You're going to take care of things." Secondly, not only that only God can provide hope, but only God can lift the burden. He was under the burden of all of this. Sometimes as a parent, you get burden for your kids. You find yourself at night lying awake, thinking about all the things that are going on in their lives, kind of wondering where they are, maybe not physically per se, but where they are spiritually and where they're going. You're wondering what the future is going to hold for them, and all this stuff begins to spin around in your mind, and you get pressed down by it all. And you feel weighed down by it all, and you're burdened about them, but hey, as a parent, there's only so much you can do. I mean, you can guide them and direct them, but ultimately they have a will of their own, and they've got to make some of their own decisions. Sometimes the decisions they make aren't the ones you would want them to make. As you go through all this, you find yourself struggling, and there's a burden that's there. And ultimately, as David is going through this passage, there were many things that God had allowed to come in David's life that were pressing down upon him. Now, you think a little bit about him. For example, Absalom. Struggle. Rejection. Even his own father. There were battles that he had gone through and struggles that were going on in his life. And all this was pressing down upon him. Verse 10 says, Lord, remove thy stroke away from me, for I am consumed by the blow of thine hand. In other words, God had allowed certain things to happen in his life. They weren't necessarily things that he would have chosen. They weren't necessarily things that he wanted. But God had allowed those things to be in his life. And he was burdened and struggling with them. The same thing may be true in your life tonight. Maybe it's your upbringing. Maybe it's your family. Maybe it's some issue with a parent or some issue with a child. And as you look at all of this stuff that is in your life that is just pressing down upon you, you begin to understand, even though it wasn't necessarily directly all that God wanted for you, it is what God has allowed for you. Sometimes the biggest struggle you have is accepting what the Lord has allowed to come in your life and all the heartaches and all the heartbreaks and all the tension and all the pressures that come along with that. And there's a heaviness that is in your life that is just pressing down upon you, and frankly, you just want out. And yet I think what he's doing is working his way here, struggling his way through to accept what God has allowed to come in his life, and to ask the Lord to be gracious and to remove that pressure and to remove that tension, but not necessarily to get him out from underneath everything that's there, but to use it in his life. You know, the biggest problem in life is not often what we go through, but it's how we respond to what we go through. There are people that go through tremendous opposition and difficulty and struggle in their lives, and seemingly, they come through it pretty well. And there are other people that go through very little opposition and persecution and trials, and they don't go through it so well. A lot of it has to do with how you respond. David is struggling with this, but I think rather than taking the whole burden on himself and letting it wear him down, he's seeing the hand of God at work in his life, and he's ultimately using or allowing the Lord to use it to turn his heart back unto the Lord. He's giving it over to God. He's asking God to work. He's asking God to remove this sense of pressure that's there. Notice verse 11, when thou with rebukes dost correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth. Surely every man is vanity. Instead of getting caught up in everything that he's going through, he's seeing this as God at work and using the emptiness and the vanity and the brevity of life to show David what really matters and what really is of value. It's ultimately not about what we're going through in life. It's about our relationship with the Lord. For many of us, if we didn't have some tough times, some times where we didn't have a job, or we couldn't pay the bills, or we just had some pressing health issue facing us, we wouldn't know much of the Lord. And yet when we go through those times, recognizing the hand of God, accepting it from the Lord, but asking God to be gracious and to lift the burden so that we're not so weighed down by it. That doesn't mean the problem necessarily goes away, but the pressure goes away because we give it over to God. No doubt I'm speaking to someone tonight. There are some pressures in your life, and they're bearing down upon you, and you're frustrated about them, and you're struggling with them, and you're not happy with them. But you haven't gotten to the point where you're really giving it to God and you're letting God use it in your life. And you know what? Most of the time, the Lord is not going to remove the pressure until you learn the lesson. Now, we're pretty smart. Sometimes we have a way of getting out from underneath the pressure. But you know what happens when you pull yourself out from underneath the pressure cooker that God has put you in and is using to work in your heart? Guess what happens? He's got a bigger pressure cooker. And if you get out from underneath that one, He's got a bigger one beyond that. He's very interested in you learning what He wants you to learn, and whatever tool He needs to use to arrange that in your life, He will bring it to bear, because He's ultimately wanting you to turn your heart and your affection and your devotion toward Him. And rather than getting all caught up with all the tensions and all the circumstances and all the struggles, what He's really wanting you to do is He's wanting you to turn your heart to Him. The last point here is only God can bring the smile. Notice verses 12 and 13. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Hold not thy peace at my tears, for I am a stranger with thee and a sojourner as all my fathers were. The idea is, he comes to the conclusion, look, I am just a temporary, transitional person in this world that I'm living. I'm like a pilgrim or a stranger wandering through the land of earth, as we call it. This is not my home. I don't need to get all attached. I don't need to get all worked up. I don't need to get all frustrated. I don't need to do all that. I just need to understand the role that God has given me, and that ultimately God is at work in my life, and that His purpose is not so much what we might call earthly in nature, but it's heavenly in nature. And he's turning his mind and his thinking and his emotions off of the day-to-day world that he's living in, and he's turning them unto the Lord. And ultimately, he's recognizing that God is the one that can bring the joy and the blessing in life, no matter what the circumstances are. Verse 13 says this, "Oh, spare me that I may recover strength." This word strength is a word that means to literally glean or to smile. Before I go hence and be no more. Ultimately, here's what he's talking about. Life is not real happy for him right now. And he's struggling through it, and he's working through it, and God is using all this to turn his heart unto the Lord. But ultimately, he knows that it's only as God is gracious to him and gives him grace and removes some of that pressure, and that he turns it over to the Lord, that this sense of joy and ability to smile and to be joyful and to be happy will ultimately return back unto him. I wish I could say that the happy people you meet in life are believers. Sometimes that's true. But sometimes it's not so true. The NASB kind of catches the sense of this. He says this in Psalm 39:13, "Turn thy grace away from me that I may smile again before I depart and am no more." Could I be speaking to someone tonight that frankly it's been a little while since you smiled? You're kind of burdened down tonight. You're kind of worn out tonight. You're struggling. Life's not been easy. But you've just continued to struggle and struggle. You've moved the chairs on the deck of your life around. You've arranged them about every way you know to arrange them. You put them right side up. You put them upside down. You shuffled this and moved that and rearranged this, somehow hoping to get a little relief in your life, to get a little pressure off of your life. And you've done about everything you know to do except to really look to God. God's the only one that can bring hope. God's the only one that can lift the burden. God's the only one that can really give you the smile. Hey, you're not going to get it through money. You're not going to get it through success. You're not going to get it from wiggling around the problems, getting out from underneath the pressure and somehow arranging life so it's easy and comfortable and all the kind of things that we try to do. You're only really going to have joy and peace and the smile of God in your life as your life is arranged and turned over to the Lord, and you are looking to Him and to Him alone to bring the peace and the joy and the blessing in your life. And you stop trying to play God. Stop trying to get your hands in the cookie jar. Take your hands out of the cookie jar. And as David is working through it, he comes to a point here in this passage where what he's doing is all of this stuff that he has in life is causing him to turn his heart unto the Lord. Now, remember, this is David, the sweet psalmist of Israel. And I love this passage because he is peeling back the surface of his life If you would have thought anyone would have been happy, anyone would have been jubilant, anyone would have sensed the blessing of God upon his life, it would have been David. But David struggled just like we struggle. And it wasn't the removal of problems that was the answer. It wasn't the wiggling around that. It was ultimately he was driven by the pressures and the problems of life to God. My friend, that's the only place you're going to find real peace. That's the only place you're going to find real joy. You're not going to get it in a job. You can get the most wonderful job. You can change your circumstances. You can do everything you want to do. But you know what? The burden's still going to be there. Because you're only going to find peace and joy and blessing in the Lord. And as you get to the end of this passage, you get a sense that David he's been holding on to everything in his life. He's been struggling with everything in his life. He just kind of lets go. And he sees himself as a pilgrim who is wandering through the land of earth, not to become too attached, not to try to hold on to stuff, not to try to find a self-fulfillment satisfaction here upon the earth, but to see himself as a child of God that God is watching over, protecting, providing for, and ultimately will bring blessing and joy and peace in his heart as only God can do. And he comes out at the right place, folks. Tonight, it may be that there may be someone here tonight, you've been struggling with those kind of things, and you need to go where David goes. You just make a beeline to the Lord tonight. Let's pray together. Father, quite often, we look in the wrong direction. We look in the wrong place. We look at the wrong answers. And I pray that as we just struggle along a little bit with David tonight, may we come out at the right place and ultimately in the right person. May we find fulfillment in you and in you alone. Forgive us, O Lord, for letting earthly, temporal things turn our head and grab the devotion of our hearts. May we understand, Lord, that ultimately you are what life is all about. That no sense of fulfillment here upon this earth will ever truly bring the joy that you alone can bring. And I pray that we would be folks that are fixed, that are focused upon you. And may we allow, Lord, the complexities of life to drive us to you. And to cause us to know you. And Lord, cause you to do a greater work in our lives tonight. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.